If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 562. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about Native American ruins, red rocks, volcanoes, a slot canyon, and the Grand Canyon as we go to northern Arizona. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. I'm excited about today's show to one of my favorite states in the United States, Arizona. I'd like to welcome to the show Mark Smith, who is a journalist from Fort Worth, Texas, but has come to talk to us about northern Arizona. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. I've been listening for a couple of years. I really like your show and glad to be a part of it now.
Excellent. And Mark will be looking for a job later on this week. So if you fall in love with Mark through this interview, just contact me and we'll get you a hold of Mark. Mark, you pitched me the Flagstaff and Sedona area of Arizona. We talked about it a bit and we've expanded that, but why should someone go to northern Arizona?
Well, I had never been there until my wife and I went there in April, and I fell in love with the place. There is any kind of nature you want, you can find.
Rainforest.
Well, okay. Almost any kind of nature that you can find in the Southwest U.S.
Okay.
You can find in northern Arizona. There are mountains, there's desert, there's forests, there's red rock mesas and buttes, badlands, lakes, big sky and fresh air. And then, oh yeah, there's canyons.
I think people may be familiar with at least one canyon in Arizona. And we're going to talk about that a little bit, even though we have talked about the Grand Canyon a bit on the show. We've talked about rafting through it, not so much actually visiting it from the rim. So what kind of itinerary would you recommend? We're flying into probably Flagstaff for this trip?
Most people that I heard and met while I was there, they flew in to Phoenix, actually. My wife and I drove from Fort Worth, and it was not a bad drive.
Okay.
As far as a one-week itinerary, I mean, I could spend a month there easy. But if we're boiling it down to a week, I would say let's spend a couple of days, maybe 3 days in Grand Canyon, one day in Sedona, and then split up the three more days between Page and Flagstaff.
Okay. And so if we're going to do that, maybe we'd start in Phoenix then actually, might get a better flights than drive up to Sedona, which is relatively close. Should we start in Sedona?
Sure. We spent a full day in Sedona. We got there early, which was good because we beat a lot of the other tourists there. We started our day at Cathedral Rock, which is a really remarkable giant red rock just south of town. There is a trail that will take you right up to the rock, and you can walk in and around it. The trail itself was challenging, to say the least. At one point, you are on all fours climbing up this rock trail. And it's not the easiest trail, but it was a lot of fun and well worth it. The views when we got up there all the way around were amazing. When we saw the trail map, it said that it was 0.7 miles, I think. And we were like, oh, that'll take no time at all. But it took a little bit more time because we were increasing our elevation significantly. So after that, we went and checked out Bell Rock, but the parking lot was full. And that's because even though it was early April, school was still in. Sedona is a pretty popular spot these days. We found out some other things that we checked out was the Chapel of the Holy Cross, which is a beautiful chapel, very simply made, and it was built right into the Red Rock. And it's a very spiritual experience, and there's no church services there. All you do is you walk in, you can sit down, you can kneel, and you look out at Sedona, and you can buy some candles. That's a very popular place as well. We struggled to get a parking spot there.
And when you mention Sedona, it's interesting that you started with a hike because a lot of people are going up there for either the shopping or a spiritual experience. And when I say spiritual experience, usually when I'm thinking of Sedona, a lot of people are pitching crystals and more new agey things rather than a chapel. But Sedona is certainly known for that. Little bit of a hippie city, wouldn't you say?
It is, definitely. And we saw that. We didn't get all into that while we were there. We were more focused on the hiking and the scenery and everything. But as you drive through uptown, it's just a strip of really nice looking boutique shops and a lot of art galleries and spas and psychics.
Right.
It's definitely new age. You can find a map of the energy vortices. And I'm not really going to be able to explain what those are. There was one at Cathedral Rock, according to the map, and one at Chapel of the Holy Cross. I can't say that it felt any different than the rest of town to me, but to each his own.
Okay. But you're right. It is a very pretty spot.
Yes.
So it's interesting that whether or not you're into that, you can still enjoy Sedona as you did. And then I think you went north from Sedona also into a very pretty, and we talked about woods and forest.
You take the 89A road up to the, as the locals call it, the switchbacks, up into Flagstaff. And that's a very scenic drive just between Flagstaff and Sedona. And that takes less than an hour to get between both places. But Flagstaff was our base camp for our
stay. Hang on a second here. You skipped the fact that that is a pretty road.
Yeah.
You're going through, what is the name of the canyon there? Walnut?
Oak Creek Canyon.
Oak Creek Canyon. Okay. Walnut Canyon is a different national monument there elsewhere in Arizona. Oak Creek Canyon. And to me, Oak Creek Canyon looks like it ought to be in Colorado rather than Arizona. Aspen trees and deciduous forest instead of saguaro cactus or something like that.
That part of the drive wasn't even Red Rock. Like it did feel like a totally different state. That was a beautiful spot. We stopped at a couple scenic overlooks there as well.
Excellent. Okay. And then did you get a chance? I know you're on the way up to Flagstaff and we're going to get there in just a second. There's a couple national parks on the way between Sedona and Flagstaff. I don't know if you had a chance to stop at either Tuzagoot or Montezuma's Castle.
I did not stop there. I remember Montezuma's Castle was on the other side of the interstate.
Yeah, like that would be a little harder the route you went. Exactly.
Yeah, we actually stopped there and it wasn't open yet. There really early in the morning.
Yeah, let's just make a quick mention of what these two are. These are two different sites that are national parks and they're both Native American sites. And I want to say that they are Sanagua people, but I could be mistaken. They could be older. They could be Anasazi. But their cliff dwellings, especially the Montezuma's Castle, is almost like a Mesa Verde in miniature. And when I say in miniature, I mean really, really tiny comparatively. It's not a castle.
Yeah.
It is something that is a small number of houses, like 3, 4, or 5 houses in a niche in the cliffs, but it's very, very well preserved, which is one of the things that's very interesting about it. It was built somewhere in the 700s. Yeah, it is Sinagua. Okay, Sinagua Indians, or literally without water, Sinagua. Both of those are interesting stops, and they won't take you that long to stop at, assuming they're open. Take you less time, in fact, if they're closed. But I would recommend the two of those. Tuzagut is a little different. It's on the top of a mountain, and so it's not a cliff dwelling per se, but it's also from early American peoples.
Mm-hmm. We saw some other ruins or just outside of Sedona, very small within the national forest, the Hananqui ruins. Really small, like one cliff dwelling was basically the entire thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can see those all over the state.
Excellent. And while I look up who was it that was at Tuzagut, why don't you talk to us a little bit about Flagstaff?
Flagstaff was our base camp for this trip. We spent about a week there. There is a lot to Flagstaff. When you hear Arizona, you usually think desert, at least I do. But it's actually in the middle of the Coconino National Forest, and it is a forest, and it's in the high desert. Flagstaff is much more temperate than other parts of Arizona, like Phoenix or Tucson.
Yeah, very pretty, but in a very different way than either of those.
Absolutely. And it's surrounded by natural beauty as well. There's three national monuments within 15 minutes or 20 minutes away, as well as Mount Humphreys, which is the tallest point in Arizona. And as we drove in from the east, we could see Mount Humphreys from more than 100 miles away. And it was just a great pin on the map. It's like, there's our destination. We're going right to the base of that mountain, and we're almost there.
And you mentioned three national monuments. Which three?
Walnut Canyon National Monument is right next to Flagstaff. It's
the one I was trying to put further south, right? Okay.
It was less than 10 minutes from where we were staying. And I really hadn't heard very much about this canyon. And it doesn't look like any of the rest of Arizona either. It's not red rock. It's much more like what you might expect in Colorado. And I had seen a couple of photos and I really wasn't impressed, honestly. But we had some time to kill, so we stopped by. And I am so glad we did, because it was... It doesn't compare to Grand Canyon, but it's totally different. It's a very impressive canyon by itself. And we walked down about halfway down into it on the trail that they've got. And it was a popular place on the day that we were there on a Sunday. But you get to walk right up into several cliff dwellings from, I can't remember the exact dates that they were there, but I believe it was around the 700s that the Native American inhabited the canyon.
I'm just happened to be looking at a webpage talking about it. This one says that unlike Tuzagut, I think, which was 700s or Montezuma's Castle, this is more like the 1100s. But again, the Sinagua people and Tuzagut, well, I was correct about that. Yeah, so I didn't realize there were more cliff dwellings. There are cliff dwellings, I guess, all over Arizona, but I didn't realize there were some in Walnut Canyon. Cool.
The other two national monuments are a little bit north of Walnut Canyon. They are connected by a scenic drive. You usually hear about Walnut Canyon and then these two. And these two are Sunset Crater and Wupaki. And Sunset Crater is based around these small dormant volcanoes. Cinder cones is what they're called. And you can walk around in really old lava if you want to. And at this point, it was like walking on black sand, almost like the black sand beaches in Hawaii that I have seen and read about. And you can walk up to a cinder cone if you want. There are several there. And you get we went up there and we got a great view of the sunset as it set over Mount Humphreys from the top of this cinder cone volcano. And it was just such a surreal experience being from North Texas, where none of that exists.
I've recently been reading a book in preparation for my trip to Huntsville, Alabama, and the Space Center there about the Apollo project. And one of the things they talked about was one of the places the Apollo astronauts went for their geology training, as I recall, was Sunset Crater, because they would see some similar formations that they might see when they're exploring some of the craters on the moon. And I think that gives you some idea what the landscape was like.
It was definitely a surreal moment for us. And then if you continue on up the drive, you enter Waupaki National Monument, which is also a very hilly landscape, very grassy. And the main focus of this monument is the Waupaki ruins. And it's this very large, I believe they said it was 110 rooms, a large ancient Native American building that they had reconstructed some of it to give you a better sense of what the entire building looked like, but they left a lot of it as they had found. But there's a lot of unanswered questions.
Sure.
I remember reading that they still don't know why these people left. They had some guesses, but nothing was for sure. And you got to see a little bit about how they live and like the ball court that they had built. And you got to learn about how important some of those ball games were. And they believe that they played against other tribes. And that was really neat. I had never seen a ruin nearly that big.
Well, and we should mention that unlike everything else we've talked about so far, this is not Sanagua. This is what I previously called Anasazi. And I've forgotten that that is no longer the politically correct term. The politically correct term is the ancient Pueblo people now.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah, you mentioned being a building. It was both a building and a village, right? It was one place where a number of peoples lived. Very cool.
Right.
And apparently first inhabited like 500 AD. So now we're getting even further back. So very, very cool. Excellent. Where to next?
A little bit more about Flagstaff itself. We didn't spend a ton of time in the city, but they've got a very nice, trendy looking, walkable downtown area with lots of good restaurants as well as breweries. They had a ton of breweries. We checked out Mama Burger, which is exactly what it sounds like. And they had a delicious green chili burger, which if you are in Arizona or New Mexico, you're kind of obligated to get those green chilies.
As well you should, I should point out.
Definitely. It was a delicious meal. But outside of Flagstaff, we spent most of our time up in the Page and Grand Canyon areas.
Okay. Before you leave Flagstaff, just two other things we haven't mentioned. So unlike the Phoenix area, which is a metropolis, I mean, Phoenix is huge. It would take you an hour to drive from one end to the other. Flagstaff is much, much smaller. It's less than 70,000 people. And the reason why the climate's so different is we're up at almost 7,000 feet here at this point. So you're over a mile high. And so just keep that in mind as you're going out for these hikes that he's talking about. He's in good shape because he's hiking at mile and a half elevation, basically. So just keep that in mind and make your decisions appropriately. Cool. You were talking about heading up to Page or to
Grand Canyon. One other thing I wanted to point out about Flagstaff, it was the world's first international dark sky place.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, we really didn't know much about it, but when we got there, we noticed all the streetlights are pointing straight down, and they're muted. You feel like you're, still
that
under
amber
the stars.
Color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Usually that indicates that there's a nearby observatory. Is there one nearby Flagstaff?
Yes, the Lowell Observatory.
Oh, is that one right there? Okay, excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Oh, I see points of interest.
We did not get to see it, but we definitely would next time we go back.
Excellent. And that is quite an old observatory. That's been there quite a long time. I didn't realize it was that close there. Excellent. So shall we do Page and then Grand Canyon? Because we'll save the best. Well, I was going to say save the best for last. I don't know if that's true. We have actually done a show on Page also, but way, way back in the first year of the show, we talked about a road trip to the northern rim of the Grand Canyon. We're going to talk about the southern and then to Page, Arizona, Bryce, and Zion. So if you want to extend what we're talking about here into a 2-week trip, for instance, then either listen to that show and carry on up into Utah, or also listen to the show we did on the Navajo lands up in northeastern Arizona. Mark certainly would have covered Monument Valley. It was someplace that he really liked, and some of the things like Canyon de Chelly up in that corner, but we have covered those a little more recently. So you were mentioning Page, Arizona. I'm guessing there's a reason you went to Page and that I could guess it.
What's your guess?
My guess would be the slot canyon called Antelope Canyon.
You got it. We saw pictures online when we were researching for this trip, and we're blown away. We were kind of wondering if it would be worth it because we are more of the self-guided tour kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
And to see Antelope Canyon, you have to make a reservation for a guided tour. And we weren't super excited about that because it would cost somewhere around $30-something per person. Mm-hmm. And that meant that we would be with a group of people we didn't know and didn't know how crowded it would get, you know. But we are so glad that we decided to go for it because it was the highlight of the trip. And we had never been to Grand Canyon before. So you can trust me when I say that the lower Antelope Canyon that we visited was kind of life-changing. It was just remarkable, and we can't wait to go back there.
Now, when we've been using the word canyon here, even though I said slot canyon, people probably have the wrong mental image here. Describe what you went to.
Okay. So Antelope Canyon is a slot canyon, as you said. Mm-hmm. And what that means, it's just a very small, narrow canyon. It's most of the time you can reach out with both arms and you can touch both sides.
It's a crack in the rock.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to put it.
Yep, exactly.
There are two separate parts, upper and lower. We went to lower because it was a little bit cheaper and it was longer. The upper is supposed to be even more spectacular. So we can't wait to go back there. But we started with the lower one. And as you walk up to it, you don't notice it because it is a crevice in the ground.
Right.
And our guide said, "All right, we're here." And we said, "Where?" And she pointed down and I was like, "Oh." And so we ended up climbing down several sets of ladders and little makeshift stairs to get down to the bottom, which is covered in sand. And mm-hmm. you look up and you look around and you can't believe where you are. This is a canyon that gets flash flooded a lot over a long period of time, which is what carved mm-hmm. the walls of the canyon and created this beautiful, smooth wall that has formed rounded edges as you walk all the way through. And you can see shapes and you can see what looks like a bear carved into the wall by the water, or a picture of a Native American chief, or you see a girl with her hair blowing in the wind. And it's all just part of the rock. And the flash flooding is something that they're very careful about. We actually had ours canceled, our first reservation canceled, because of some rain that had flooded the canyon, and they had to re-sand the bottom of the canyon. So we ended up going back several days later.
Well, and way back 15, 20 years ago, I want to say somewhere in that time range, they were a little less careful, I guess, about making sure that nobody was in the canyon and there was a flash flood and there were people who drowned. It really is a bad place to be in a flash flood. So they take great care. And the problem is it doesn't even have to be raining where you are. It has to be raining somewhere upstream in the stream that feeds this crack, because it basically normally is dry or semi-dry, but occasionally just fills up with water. And I don't remember seeing the bear or the girl with the flowing hair so much. So you had a different guide than I did, obviously. But it feels to me like the shape of flowing water is really captured in the rock, is the best way I've had to describe it, in this red, multi-layered sandstone, Navajo sandstone that's there. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous area. We didn't say you're in a national park, but you're in a Navajo national park.
Yeah. You have to pay a Navajo land fee. Mm-hmm. Your guides are local Navajo Native Americans, and they guide you through. They tell you everything you could ever want to know about this place, and they will even... Well, you can't take a bad photo while you're in there, but they will show you how to take some amazing photos that by putting it up against a certain spot, up against a certain little ridge, and it just turns into an amazing photo that you get. They'll show you exactly how to take with your iPhone.
Well, and you say that you can't take a bad photo there. I would say that Mark is right. And if you find you can't take a good photo in Antelope Canyon, when you go home, you put the camera up on eBay and you buy postcards. Because I mean, literally, this is just one of the most spectacular places as a photographer. I have been to both Upper and Lower, and so let's talk a little bit about the differences. I wouldn't say that Upper Canyon is more spectacular. So there's the good news for you, Mark, is that it's different. I went to Lower in the morning and then Upper around noon because people had recommended that, because there's a shaft of light that you'll always see in these pictures of these Arizona slot canyons. If you see a slot canyon and a shaft of light coming down into this red sandstone, that is probably Upper Antelope Canyon at around noontime. And the guide will throw up some sand in the air so that you get the shaft of light in there and such. It is more accessible than Lower. You don't have to climb down any ladders. You mentioned climbing into this crack. The crack of Lower Antelope Canyon is about the width of my shoulders, just to put this in perspective. Upper Antelope Canyon, you walk into. You take a truck out there. You sit in the back of a pickup truck, so you have to get up on a pickup, but then you take a truck out there, you get off, and you walk into the canyon. So it's more accessible for anybody who's got mobility issues, but both of them spectacular. Now, the interesting thing is, when I was there, you didn't have to do a group tour to Lower Antelope Canyon. So it sounds like that has changed, or at least it changed for the time you were there. I just walked up and was literally there with just me and the one person who was from the family that was running it at the time. So sounds like things have changed since we talked about that 10 years ago on the show, but very beautiful place and worth going a little out of the way to get there.
Mm-hmm.
We should say, while you're there, the reason why the town of Page is there is for the nearby dam. And if you're at all a geek in terms of things mechanical and construction and those sort of things, you might be interested in visiting the Grand Coulee Dam. Is that the, no, what's the dam there?
The Glen Canyon.
Glen Canyon Dam, sorry. Yeah, you might be interested in visiting the Glen Canyon Dam, which is right there at Page, Arizona. You can, or at least you could when I was last there, get a tour of it, although that maybe have changed. So I would look at the website for that for sure.
We went to the Glen Canyon Dam. And we also went to another spot in the Glen Canyon National Recreation Area, another spot on Lake Powell. And that is a place that is at the top of my list of places I want to go and to explore Lake Powell a little bit more.
Okay. And by boat or by hiking?
It's mostly water recreation. There is a Rainbow Bridge National Monument that you can drive to a spot out in the middle of nowhere and then hike like 10 miles to get to it. Or you can take a boat to a designated dock and then hike, I think, a mile and a half to it. So that's what I want to do.
Well, and when you say out in the middle of nowhere, I remember driving to Page, Arizona from the north rim of the Grand Canyon and getting nothing on the radio at all. So you were kind of out there in the middle of the nowhere at the time. And until you get to Page, which obviously was built for this dam. So, and then you mentioned the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm. Coming from Page down toward Grand Canyon is Horseshoe Bend, just like 10, 15 minutes outside of Page. You've probably seen photos of the Colorado River making a horseshoe shape as it winds through the Red Rock Canyon. This is still technically Glen Canyon. It is just north of where it turns into or is called Grand Canyon. It's a very popular spot. You want to get there early. That's true for everything in this area. The earlier you get there, the fewer people there's going to be. The easier it's going to park and get around. Horseshoe Bend, it's a pretty easy, about mile-long walk to the point. And I highly recommend that. That's one of the best views from way up high that we saw while we were there.
Excellent.
But as you head back down south and then a little bit west and you enter Grand Canyon, the South Rim, we spent about 3 days total in Grand Canyon National Park. We spent about a full day doing the rim trail. We didn't do all of it, but we did several different points. And we stopped at the easternmost point, which is Desert Watchtower. We also went all the way to the westernmost points, which are only accessible by bus. That's one thing that we really appreciated about Grand Canyon was all the parking lots filled up pretty quickly during the day, so it was always best to get around by bus.
Now, what time of year were you in Arizona?
We were in early April.
Okay.
In the Flagstaff and Grand Canyon areas at that elevation, the temperatures ranged from 30s to, it reached the highs of 70s a couple times while we were there. And that is perfect hiking weather. We could not have asked for better weather, except for our first day in Grand Canyon. We got chased out by a snowstorm.
Oh, I was going to say, I've been there in April and had it being snowing at the rim and 80 degrees at the bottom. So, you know, there is a range of temperatures, obviously, depending where you are. But yeah, April, it's certainly possible to see snow at the Grand Canyon.
Right.
Obviously.
We were afraid of getting locked in or stuck.
Yep.
So we hightailed out of there and we missed some really great photo opportunities. If we're ever back there and it snows again, we're going to stick around.
And I understand on this trip, you didn't get a chance to go to, but would like to go sometime to the Havasupai reservation further west along the canyon.
Yes. Many of your listeners have probably seen photos of Havasu Falls. I saw them and it was at the top of my priority list. Unfortunately, we had a really difficult time getting a hold of the Havasupai people. That's their land that Havasu Falls is in. And you have to get camping permits just to be allowed in. And then it's a 12-mile hike one way down to the falls.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take a mule ride or a horse ride, I can't remember which, for a significant amount of money. Or you can take a helicopter ride that takes like 10 minutes.
Sure.
But that's an even more significant amount of money. But you still need permits from the last I was able to find. It was actually really difficult to find out exactly what I needed to do and when I needed to do it. So if you plan to go there in 6 months, I would say start working on that now.
Okay. I was going to say, how soon did you start? We know that you weren't successful, but I wanted to.
I probably started about 3 months is when I started casually looking.
Okay.
But it wasn't until about a month before that I realized how difficult it was going to be.
Got it. Interesting. Well, and the other thing we should say from Paige, so when you're in Flagstaff or you're down in Sedona or in Phoenix and you go to the Grand Canyon, you're going to go to the South Rim because it's just a whole lot further to the North Rim. When you were in Paige, it was actually probably equidistant. You could have gone to either one at that point. It really just depends where you're going next.
Right.
If you're heading towards Las Vegas, then you'd go to the North Rim potentially or up to the Utah parks. But if you're wanting to stay down in the southern part, then the South Rim. South Rim gets, I think it's 10 times more visitors than the North Rim, in part because it stays open all year.
Right.
So it's significantly more facilities, but also significantly more tourists on the South Rim.
Right. The North Rim was closed.
Yeah.
They opened up in like mid-May, which I was surprised to find out.
Yeah, the North Rim is higher elevation.
Right. And it's definitely something we want to do, particularly because we haven't been there, but also because of that, I believe the ratio is 9 to 1.
9 to 1
visitors,
okay.
South Rim to North Rim, which is even in the middle of April when school is still in, those parking lots in South Rim will fill up fast.
Right.
I can't imagine what it's like in the summer.
Well, and it's a little misleading in the sense that there is more space in the South Rim that people are spread out at, but it is significantly more crowded at the South Rim. So that's just something to keep in mind, just depending on your schedule and what you're trying to fit in. Excellent. Any other spots we want to talk about here that you went on this road trip?
I do want to point out Petrified Forest National Park.
Oh, sure.
It is 1.5 hours east of Flagstaff. We stopped there for a little over half a day on our drive in to Flagstaff. And it's not something that I had really heard about until I started planning this trip, but it's a remarkable place. And I mean, I want to go back there. There are two different sections. You've got the Painted Desert, which is just a fancy way of saying the Badlands. And then you've also got the Petrified Forest with petrified logs just sitting there. You can touch it. You can stand next to it and show that it's wider than you are tall. Some of them are, and you can't leave with it, but you're allowed to touch it and know that it was there before the dinosaurs. And that's a really remarkable feeling.
And when you say the Badlands, do you want to give people a verbal picture of what you're talking about when you talk about Badlands?
Yeah, think of a multi-layered, multicolored cake. And now picture that as desert mounds and mesas.
Okay.
And there's two different color schemes, for lack of a better term. There's the red area where different shades of red and orange and beige that you can walk around. You can walk in it. You're not supposed to walk over it, but you can walk off the trail if you want and just take it all in and marvel at this. I mean, they just look like mounds of clay, dirt is how I would describe it best. And then there's also the Blue Mesa Trail, which was really remarkable. Lavender and blue and gray shades, they're all in different layers that when we were there, we were alone. And that was a very unique experience.
Well, when you talk about Badlands too, we're not talking about something with a lot of vegetation.
Right. It was bare.
Yeah. And as someone who grew up in the West, I really love the beauty and barrenness of these sort of places. But it's something, if you're coming from someplace, I was just in Alabama, for instance, where everywhere I drove was very, very green. This is not that.
Right.
This is the opposite of that. If you were on the moon, it wouldn't be less inviting. A little more air here or there, but beautiful, beautiful place. Excellent. Any other places?
That about sums up the general trip that we took.
Which place surprised you? Which place was not on your itinerary and it needs to be on somebody else's?
I would think of two things that I haven't specifically mentioned yet. Mm-hmm. One was the Lee's Ferry Campground, which is right at the point where Glen Canyon National Recreation Area turns into Grand Canyon National Park.
Got it.
You can drive over and then you can park and walk out on a pedestrian bridge over the beautiful blue Colorado River. Mm-hmm. This is between Page and Grand Canyon. Then you can drive down right to the bank of the river. And that was something that we really wanted to do. But then we found out that it would take a full day just to hike down Grand Canyon down to the bottom.
Sure.
We are not in quite that physical shape to do that. But this was something we could do. And we did a couple hikes down there along the Colorado River at Lee's Ferry. That was something that I had never seen in any sort of guidebook or anything. It wasn't something I'd read much about. And I'm really glad that we made that stop.
Excellent. And the other one?
That would be a specific point on the South Rim. Mm-hmm. It's not on any guidebooks that I saw. It's not on any of the maps they gave out or on their website. I heard about it through some other travel podcasts that I don't regularly listen to, but I just happened to find this one because it mentioned Grand Canyon.
It's okay to mention the name of the podcast. We'll give them credit.
I honestly don't remember.
Okay, all right. But it's only because Mark doesn't remember that we're not trying to hold you back from other knowledge. Okay.
They were recording their episode from this point. Their legs were dangling over it. And
oh, gosh.
it's called Shoshone Point.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And it was not something that we had seen anywhere else. In fact, when you drive up to it, there is no sign. There's just a blank dirt spot that's a makeshift parking lot. And you see a trail with a gate in front of it so that cars don't come through. And then a sign it's a scary sign. It says no access allowed without proper permits. And we looked it up and we found that was referring specifically to camping.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Not just hiking for a day hike. And we just happened to have our lunch with us, our picnic lunch. And so we decided to try that. And we walked, it's about a mile, but it's really easy hiking. Took us maybe 20 minutes. And then you get to the point, which is one of the best views of Grand Canyon that we saw. And we saw just about every other point on South Rim. Mm-hmm. You are surrounded by more than 180 degrees of Grand Canyon because it sticks out so far and you can get almost, you feel like you're almost getting into the canyon and nobody knows about it. When we were there, we saw like two other people in an hour. And that was something, it was just so serene and peaceful. And I could have stayed there for days. That's something that I fully intend to go back to.
Excellent. We don't often talk about camping trips, or we don't do it all the time. Camping tips for this area, either for the national parks or for the other places you camped?
For the most part, we stayed in a hotel.
Okay.
We didn't really know what the weather would be.
Sure. That makes sense.
So we decided to just stick with a hotel for the most part. But as far as camping, I would definitely recommend the trails that go down into Grand Canyon. If you are in that physical condition, we took some of the two most popular trails, the South Kaibab and the, I believe it's called the Bright Angel.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Both of those, we took them down into it, and we only made it a couple thousand feet before we had to turn around and make the very treacherous hike back up. But if you are of that condition, you enjoy camping, if you can get down there toward the bottom of the canyon, there are some really special places that we can see from afar, but to be down there would be truly amazing.
Excellent. Now, you're talking about an area of the world here that has got some pretty spectacular beauty. Your favorite spot?
Definitely Antelope Canyon.
Okay. I figured that would be the case, but I thought I would ask it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about Northern Arizona that made you laugh. One thing that caught you by surprise, maybe.
I mean, the most surprising thing would probably be getting chased out by a snowstorm, as well as I am still surprised that a tiny little crevice in the ground overshadows one of the natural wonders of the world to me.
Mm-hmm.
Not something I was expecting.
Yeah, I can see that. Excellent. As we go to wrap this up, any final three words that you would summarize this region with?
Well, a lot of it was red.
Yep.
Spiritual.
Okay.
And that's referring to Sedona and just the experience of being out in this amazing landscape. And the other word would just be natural.
Sure.
You're just surrounded by nature wherever you go, and it's all unique and different and really amazing.
Excellent. And one of these days we'll do a show on Southern Arizona. We really haven't done one on Phoenix and on Tucson, and I'd love to do that. And if there's somebody who's an expert in those areas, please do let me know. But a very different experience than this northern region, both higher and some of the amazing national parks and national monuments. We didn't even get to the top 10 national parks and national monuments in Arizona. We covered a lot of them in this show, but there are so many in this very large but very beautiful state. Mark, I don't believe that you've got a place that we can go for your travel writing, but if you're looking to hire a journalist, I know one who might be available. So give Mark a call.
We are starting a blog and an Instagram page. Both of them are National Park Travelers. If you go to nationalparktravelers.wordpress.com, you'll find us.
And we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Mark, thanks for coming on the show and sharing with us your newfound love for Arizona.
Yeah, thank you. I had a lot of fun.
Speaking of the Grand Canyon, there's two family stories that I thought you might enjoy. One is apparently one of the cousins of my father, or the cousins of my father's father, I don't remember quite who it was a corn farmer from Iowa who came and saw the Grand Canyon and looked inside, and his entire reaction was, "Yep, you sure can't grow corn there." And then we had another family friend who went to the Grand Canyon and honestly was just unimpressed. And as they drove away, they saw all the cars heading to the Grand Canyon. And he said, "You know, I think we missed something." They turned around and they got back to the Grand Canyon at sunset. And we're very glad they did. We're making plans in the Amateur Traveler Trips group, amateurtraveler.com/trips, for the 2018 trip and possibly the 2019 trip as well. So come in there if you're interested in traveling with us. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at Amateur Traveler. And thanks so much for listening.